Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by MUBI, the online streaming cinema, for your free 30-day trial. Go to MUBI.com/filmstage. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the movie review podcast for thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today, we have Michael Snydell.
Hey, I'm back!
Yeah, he lives. Hashtag pray for Michael worked. He is alive.
Thoughts and prayers, guys. Thoughts and prayers.
All right, and we also have Bill Graham.
Woo!
Yeah. So today we are
still
going
no issue with Mother.
Today we're going to be talking about Rat Film, the documentary video essay thing from Theo Anthony, and that's all we're going to do. It's the only thing on the docket, so looking forward to getting into that. And that was Michael Jackson's Ben, the song about a rat.
Do we want to mention a little bit about maybe the other potential roundtable topics that keeps getting pushed back? Because to be honest with you guys, the shitstorm over at Alamo continues to happen. So
yeah.
it's kind of like every day is a new, oh, okay, so that happened.
We ran out of time to record that on the roundtable we were going to do. And then it was kind of like, well, man, you know,
was that
out
last Wednesday or 2 Wednesdays
it was like
ago? Because so
ago,
much
I
has
think.
Happened.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And so we were like, well, I guess there's nothing to talk about. I guess we don't have to weigh in. And yet things continue to keep happening. So perhaps this week or later next week, maybe we'll try to have a roundtable because it doesn't seem like it's going to stop.
Yeah.
So, you know. Plenty of time to talk about an endemic issue that appears to be nowhere near going away. Sadly.
Yeah. I think it's the other thing I think briefly too, is that we didn't want to be, not only is that it's developing, but we didn't want to be too hasty in how we talk about this. Cause it's absolutely something now, these scandals involving two different people, but you know, a larger atmosphere and some things that we shouldn't, you know, pretend to comment for, you know, and some things that are relevant to each of our interests.
I would say at this point, this whole thing has firmly embroiled at least three people.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that, you know, as the situation unfolds, we may return to it to talk about it. I don't remember even what the other topic we were going to address was, but we have a bunch that are piling up as time goes on, so you know, keep an ear out for another roundtable soon. In the meantime though, we have this wonderful film to talk about, and we also have to do all of our plugs and stuff. So find us on Twitter at Film Stage Show, Facebook The Film Stage Show. We got a rating, so thank you whoever gave us a 5-star rating but did not comment. Yeah,
I got a cryptic comment on my Good Time Letterboxd review, which was also a plug for our episode there. And he said he loved the episode. It wasn't totally understandable comment, but it was, in fact, saying that he loved the episode.
He got his point across.
Sure.
Also, become a patron of ours. Go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. And for as little as $1 an episode, you can become a patron of ours and get locked in to get some cool prizes and stuff. First of all, you'll get access to our private Slack channel. So if talking to us sounds like a prize to you, then it is. And we actually have two Blu-rays that we're giving away. The first is The Big Sick, which stars Kumail Nanjiani, and we talked about on this show. And the second is The Mummy, which we didn't talk about, and I don't know if any of us saw it. So,
what movie?
Give a dollar.
Did you guys hear the good news that Kumail Nanjiani and John Cena are going to be in a buddy comedy together?
Yeah, cannot wait. That's going to be good times. So go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow and become a patron, and you will get entered to win the big sick or to be cursed with The Mummy. Anyway, Movie Opinions. Is also a sponsor. And Movie is the online streaming cinema where every day they introduce a new film that you have 30 days to watch. So you have a constantly rotating selection of 30 films for your viewing enjoyment. They have one of the best user interfaces on their numerous apps. You can watch it on your phone, your smart TV, your computer. And of course, you can download these movies to take them with you on the go so that you can check them out even if you're not going to be around a Wi-Fi connection. I feel like I had something else to say about Mubi, but now I can't remember what it was. I mean, it's great. So there's always that. Yes, so 30-day trial of Mubi. That's the full life cycle of one of their films. All you have to do is go to MUBI/page. So again, that's page. A lot of stuff happening. But aside from the things that we've glancingly referenced, anything else to say before we get into our feature review, gentlemen? So here is the trailer.
It ain't never been a rat problem in Boston. Always been a people problem. And that ain't gonna change until you educate the people.
So that is a surprisingly cryptic trailer. Glad to see you and I landed on the same note. For
note that we do a lot of this stuff live.
Yeah, for Rat Movie. So yeah, like I said, I mean, its baseline is this is a film about rats in Baltimore. Now, where it goes from there, there are many, many places it can, and it does. So let's talk about it. Let's see what we thought of Rat Movie. Let's begin with Michael Snydell so we can see if truly he has gotten his legs back under him from the Mother review.
I'm back. And Rat Film's an interesting one to come back to because I'm still not 100% sure what I thought about it. I finally had the chance to watch it last night, and it's an interesting film because although Brian is right that like the logline is that this is about, you know, the last 100 years of Baltimore and associating an issue of and endemic, you know, or systemic issues in the city, it's it also is weirdly kind of a movie that implicates its own director in like in the movie not fully being able to answer the questions of, you know, of what that even means, because it's a movie that's at once trying to again talk about those historical things, but then it's just as likely to go into, you know, these absurdist things like, you know, where they'll have this monotone almost academic narration that then leads into a person who uses a natty ice can to describe how big the rats are.
Yeah.
And that those type of like digressive associations are what makes the film so thrilling and also so kind of antagonistic. You know, from the editing to the soundtrack, which is just from Baltimore native Dan Deacon, who you know, got some viral fame for kind of a bizarre video involving a chair. And I won't say more than that, but it kind of became like a hallmark for stoners. But Dan Deacon kind of does like this candy colored, you know, like joyful synth celebrations usually. But in this, it's like these like terrifying like 70s era drones. And I go all over the place with this movie because it kind of refuses to follow any other chronology than a vague association to its larger thesis, which is constantly shifting. And I think it mostly works. It is a little bit, I think, too willfully obtuse. And I think some of the places and kind of crevices that it finds itself in, specifically related when it starts dealing with CSI techniques a little bit, it's possible that the movie goes a little bit too off the rails. And I think Theo Anthony definitely has an understanding that he wants this movie to go off the rails and that this was never going to be an easy subject to reduce. And so I think the greatest success of this movie is that it's able to kind of recognize the own flaws of its format and what it's trying to do and the limitations of not only, you know, scientific analysis, but the limitations of what happens when you're watching these people, you know, the difference between something being sociological and something being observational. And I think the ways that it continually finds humanity in this very unique cast of characters, but also wants to kind of show the ways that this world consistently wants to dehumanize people. I think that is ultimately the bizarre line that it kind of really successfully travels, is just trying to meditate on the history of this city and why we profile people, essentially. I don't know. This movie's all over the place, but it's kind of a joy even when it's kind of pushing you out.
All right. Bill Graham, what did you think of Rat Film?
So if you're looking for this for a conventional documentary, like Michael was mentioning, you are definitely not going to be happy. This documentary does not have any interest in kind of sticking to one specific narrative for any longer than, I would say, a 10 to 15 minute span. Sometimes what they detail and like kind of touch on is kind of disgusting and gross. And I don't mean the rats. I mean the way that some of these people treat hunting for rats as some kind of sick, weird sport. And you know, I don't know if there can be spoilers for a documentary, but maybe that is one. Maybe that's what you might feel after the fact, but I don't know, whatever. This film has a lot on its mind, like Michael was mentioning. I think it's interesting that it kind of loses sight, like Michael was saying, about the rats in general. The house that he's mentioning, or the rooms, the murder rooms that he's mentioning, actually has like a long and interesting history that like an entire documentary could have focused on itself. Although I will say that perhaps the guy that they have kind of introducing and talking about it, maybe not the best choice. He kind of bored me to tears. But just the same, that murder room, all those things set up in Baltimore are very, very interesting. as for what this documentary like taught me and kind of made me understand was kind of the I guess the nugget that he was kind of dealing with, in that rats as a problem in Baltimore started in one place and has a very interesting history. And he kind of details that and how, you know, the poor were kind of secluded. And what was basically happening was that they found a bunch of rats. They were trying to figure out, how do we kill all these rats? How do we get these rats out of the way? I think he kind of ties it into something along World War II, when the U.S. was concerned that we were going to have the plague or some kind of other foreign bacteria sent over to us via rats. So we had to curb the rat population internally. And what we basically realized and decided was that instead of just killing the rats, it was much cheaper and much easier to just put in housing standards and get people out from the poverty-stricken world that they were kind of living in the slums of Baltimore. He layers that on layer on layer on layer with internal documents from the president to, I guess, his staff about how to handle the situation. And, you know, how, I guess, gerrymandering and some of this other stuff is kind of all kind of played into it, where now housing districts are set up and, you know, the poor are kind of set into one specific area. In that, I found it interesting. So that covers about half of the documentary. the rest is, I think the rat exterminator main character in the film is genuinely interesting, and it kind of gives you a life or a look into the life of kind of blue collar work and like what that entails and what he's seen throughout his life. Much of the rest is odd and feels extremely superfluous. So you know, if I can watch a documentary and kind of learn, I think bravo on that. I think maybe I could have learned that in a 5-minute short film instead, but you know, it still serves a purpose. It entertained me at the very least.
Yeah. So for me, there's a book called Rats: Observations on the History and Habitat of the City's Most Unwanted Inhabitants by Robert Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And, that was turned into a documentary by Morgan Spurlock last year. And I sort of thought that that's what this movie was. And so when I started watching it, I was like, this is not the movie that I thought it was. So I had to get over that. Because that is apparently just about rats. This movie has so much more on its mind. Sometimes to its benefit. Sometimes to its detriment. And sometimes I don't even know what the hell's going on. There's a lot to unpack into what makes this movie both work and not work. And often those are the same things, but deployed in different ways. The narration in this film, by Maureen Jones, is like Siri's slightly more emotive older sister.
Yeah.
It's a parody.
What was that?
It feels like a parody of like academic documentaries.
Yeah.
And like the expectations you have for that.
Precisely. Especially like you could hear it a little bit in that trailer, but it's like, you know, something about like, you know, identification of a creation myth. And it sounds like what people in the 80s thought like a computer was gonna be.
Yep.
Where it would be like, you know, initiating launch sequence, verify codes. And it's very off-putting at first, but then it kind of lulls you in and you kind of get into it. And like, there's things, I don't know if either of you ever been to Baltimore. I have been to Baltimore.
I believe I have. I don't know.
You
look,
have.
Look, Texas is a big state. You know exactly when you're in that state. I don't know which particular cities. I did kind of. I got close to the Pentagon.
That's Washington.
I was in Washington. I don't know. I kind of went all over in that general area. Okay, well, like
Baltimore's a good 30 miles north of Washington.
That's a 30-minute drive then.
Yeah.
Which is nothing for us. Like I mentioned, I'm from Texas, so I don't it's know.
True. It's true that in Texas you have to drive a minimum of 4 hours before you've gotten to another
major city. Yes. Yeah.
So I didn't keep track.
I did not keep track. I do not have one of those like maps of the U.S. where I'm like checking off each state that I've been to.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard, and I'm gonna let it go. I mean, if you were on the BW Parkway or 495 to 95 for 30 minutes north, and then you found yourself in Baltimore, then you were in Baltimore.
I went with my parents, so I. That's how long ago it was.
This is very strange.
Not driving.
Mike, I'm assuming that you've never been to Baltimore. Do you know if you've been to Baltimore? I mean, maybe you were bebopping around Chicago and you just don't know how far you went.
I've never been to Texas either, and now I want to understand the spatial orientation that Bill. I'm very interested now how Texas works.
Well, Texas is weird because like you could drive for like 3 hours and still technically be in Houston.
Yep.
And like, so like I'm from the East Coast. Like you're driving and you're always somewhere, but there are definitely parts of Texas that are like unincorporated. Yeah. And so you'll be like, where am I? And someone will say like, you're an hour outside Austin. I'm like, but what do I call this place? And they're like, Texas. And I'm like, okay. Meanwhile, here, it's like, well, you're in Greenbelt, but then you're in Beltsville, and then you're in Laurel, and then you're in, you know, Glen Burnie and Severna Park, and then you're up in Baltimore, and around Baltimore there's Towson. Like, no. In Texas, you're either in the city, or you're in one of, like, the small little towns, or you are in nowhere. And
I'm guessing that's where Cannibalistic Hillbillies are.
Yeah, that's where that happens.
Reenact
that. That's where the Texas Chainsaw Massacre happened.
Okay.
That in 14th Street in Austin.
Yes.
Cool. So,
you mean 6th Street?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah. Okay.
14th Street's actually probably where the cannibals are in DC. Northwest. So, anyway, so I've been to Baltimore.
Sorry.
Baltimore is a very strange city. It's got its ritzy areas and it's got its bad areas, and you can definitely tell the difference. And it's a very low slung city, so there's a lot of sky usually when you're around it. And it's got this weird feeling. It's almost Lovecraftian in the way that he used to describe like Arkham. It's an old city that's kind of built upon its own rotting bones. And I say all this with, like, the greatest affection. I was going to move to Baltimore for a while because it's cheaper there. And it's a super interesting place with a lot of culture. And this movie touches on some of it. And I have been in the back alleys. I have been to punk shows in, like, the Pigtown area and all these other, like, weird alcoves. And there's a lot of rats. So I was interested. I wasn't sure what this movie was going to do. Obviously, I had the complete wrong concept of what movie it even was. And it was interesting how they sort of layered the history of like pest control efforts alongside, you know, more racially motivated human interactions like redlining and covenants and things like that.
Sure. Something I didn't know the origins of, redlining specifically.
Ah, okay. Well, yes, now you do. Yeah. This movie will give you... It's interesting that the movie comes along when it does, because it approaches, like, urban blight and inner-city violence, you know, as it was called in the 90s, through an interesting prism of both history and an examination of, like, human nature is influenced by the environment.
Sure.
And so... That stuff
and really... very specific optics as well.
Yes. And so that stuff was interesting. But then, like, you'd be part of a video game that appeared to have no objective and was more like someone just clicking around Google Maps from the street view. And it would talk about, like, clipping into a building and suddenly you can see the universe. And that's when it was, like, a little self-parody. But it hung together, and the information given out was pretty interesting. Even stuff that I already knew about, like John B. Calhoun's Universe 25, which is like one of the weirder, more interesting things, and something that actually probably heavily influenced a movie that we talked about called High Rise, and the concept of behavioral sync. Like, these are things that I was aware of, but somehow in this movie, with that weird voice and the way that it was all laid out, became kind of more sinister and more interesting. But those digressions kept, like, really kind of not bothering me, but making me question, like, how much of this was on purpose and how much of it was just, like, throwing everything at the wall, and some of it's gonna make more sense together than others. And it was weird. It was very strange.
Or even the sincerity, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it's hard to know what it's doing. And the fact that, like, a documentary doesn't really have to have characters, but some of the people that it follows, it's hard to know what the film thinks of them. And what you feel like is a calm remove might more be a, like, self-satisfied isolation from them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it does a thing that kind of bums me out in documentaries, where it seems like the cameraman was like, we just have to check the white level, so just stand still and I'm gonna fiddle with the camera. And then it lets the camera run for like 2 minutes as someone just stands there kind of uncomfortably, and then they, like, used that take in the movie.
Yeah.
And it happens a few times, and I wasn't entirely sure how to handle that.
Because are you talking about when things seem to be moving in the background and the subjects are just standing there? Or are you talking about when it's just a B-roll of just, like, the light shine through, you know, a tangle of leaves?
No, because
there's two different things you can be touches, talking about.
The Malick touches are fine with me. It's like, for one person in particular, is a man sitting on a couch with three rats perched on him.
Yes.
And then after about a minute of that, he reaches down, picks up a wooden pipe, and, like, starts playing some music.
And then after he's
done, he puts the pipe down. And I'm like, well, what the hell was that for?
Like, yeah, did we even see that guy anymore?
No.
Yeah. Yes, we did.
When?
Who is he?
That's the husband and wife who have...
I really don't think that's right. I'm pretty sure that the husband is a completely different guy. Because he had three rats, and they appeared to only have two.
Yes, and they definitely had two.
Guys, I wrote it in my notes. I will now have to check the credits, but I'm almost sure that husband and wife couple is the same man who's doing, I guess it's not a pan flute, the flutes.
The Pied Piper.
Yeah.
And so it's things like that. And then, you know, just again, every once in a while, it really did seem like they were just, like, let the camera roll while a person was, like, uncomfortably waiting to be told that they should begin to talk. And it's something that happens in documentaries for some reason. Like, I don't know if it's some sort of, like, breaking the fourth wall type of thing or a meta commentary, but it's definitely a trend that I've noticed, and one that I'm not entirely fine with, because it's almost like you're trying to lend cinema verita to a documentary, which is not what that is. And this person isn't acting like they don't know a camera's on them. They're very clearly uncomfortable at that moment because they don't have any direction and they're not an actor. And so there's things like that kind of tweaked me. But again, overall, like, the profound oddity and weirdness and insight, it still worked on me. So 4 stars. I don't know what else to say. It's not like anything else you'll see this year, probably, but in a very different way than Mother also is like nothing else you'll see this year.
Yeah, it is a weird. I think some of the weirdness about this, and to be fair, you know, some people were certainly trying to capitalize on how much it is, you know, either unidentifiable or, you know, a hybrid of, you know, collage films and documentaries and things like that. But it's as much, you know, I mean, besides the fact that you thought this was going to be a Morgan Spurlock movie, friend.
Yeah, that was a tonal shift I had to deal with.
I think there is something to be said for like that. It's a little bit difficult for how we like digest, you know, like things that are vaguely avant-garde, or, you know, to have like part of it be rooted in, you know, documentary methods, and then part of it very much to be rooted in like this personal meditation. And I think it is a little bit weird, especially as we're talking about it. It's a lot harder to review or to, you know, even give quick reactions in the same way we do with a lot of other movies we talk about on this podcast. And to be fair, like, documentaries are difficult in itself, but I think it's especially something about this weird like middle ground that is exactly as you're saying, Brian, is what partly makes it so interesting, but also makes you wonder, you know, are we taking the piss a little bit while watching this?
It was also weird for me just because so much of it looked familiar. I'm pretty sure I've walked down some of those streets that they've been in, and it's like Washington I'm fine with. Like, I never have a moment where I see someone standing on the National Mall and I'm like, oh, I've been there, because I guess I'm just trained to accept that the city that I live closest to is pretty much just a movie set. But Baltimore is always a little weirder. And what is especially weird is that there's a woman, because there's a brief digression where there's a woman who is a snake breeder, I guess. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're talking about the pinkies and the fuzzies and everything. And I am damn sure that I have been to that reptile show that they're at when they're talking about it. Like, I recognize those Lucite containers with their multicolored, like, grease pencil writing on them and those snakes. Cause I'm a reptile guy. And when I had a snake, I went to those shows to buy frozen pinky mice to feed to them. And so it was just like, oh my God, did they go to Havre de Grace on like the first Saturday of the month and like actually film these people talking there? Like, what are the odds? Like, I could have been there. That would have been weird. So there's like it's strange being that close, but it is interesting also as someone who spent a lot of time in Baltimore and who's very aware of how quickly what is considered like safe, acceptable Baltimore turns into like bad Baltimore. To see kind of like the history illustrated in that way, to see this concept of like the redlining and the sectioning off and like some places being written out entirely and not even given a color. And then the way that the kind of like thought process for dealing with rats dovetails with the thought process for dealing with things like urban blight and behavioral sink and things like that. Especially because like I've been to those places. I've gone to concerts there. I've wandered through them.
Sure.
And I've so Baltimore is one of the places that's like weirdly proud with how much of a murder capital it is. To the point that we have
haven't they like gotten a lot better about that or
slightly? I'm pretty sure that they had a dip. But like one of my favorite things.
Hold on, Brian. Isn't Washington one of the highest murder areas as well?
It might be
Chicago too.
Yeah, but
yeah,
like
yeah,
for the
you guys suck.
You're telling me,
well, in
fucking
Texas,
Rom.
In
fuck
Texas,
Rom.
Everyone has a gun, so like you gotta be aware of it. So yeah. 2016 in Baltimore, according to the Baltimore Sun, published January 2nd, 2017. In 2016. Baltimore's second deadliest year on record.
Yeah, Baltimore's definitely does not have a very sparkling reputation. So if it's their second highest, yeesh.
Yeah. So this was from the Baltimore Sun the previous December. So just like a couple days earlier, really. Baltimore's homicide rate is down from 2015, but up over every other year on record. So I know that for a while we'd been doing pretty good, but
yeah,
that has gone down. The 2016 death toll in Baltimore was 310.
Jesus.
That's
nearly a person every single day.
Yeah. As of Wednesday, the annual homicide rate stood at 50 killings per 100,000 residents, second only to the record high rate of 55.2 killings per every 100,000 residents in 2015. This means that one out of every 2,000 people in Baltimore has been killed this year. So if you've got, and this is me being serious, if that's like the claim to fame you've got, you start laying into it, which is how people unironically call Baltimore Bodymore or Baltimorgue. There are numerous rap songs from local artists that refer to Bodymore Murderland.
Jesus.
Yeah. Just like, that's the truth of that city. I mean, I always talk to people. I'm like, you know, New York may have New York may have Law and Order or like NCIS New York or whatever, but they also have An Affair to Remember or the ending of Sleepless in Seattle or Sex in the City. Baltimore has Homicide, Life on the Street, and The Wire.
It is based in, or The Wire is based in Baltimore, right?
Okay.
I'm just making sure.
Yeah, David Simon like single-handedly brought a lot of attention to Baltimore, but in a very negative way. So we should all be happy that he's now moved on to 1970s New York.
Well, I mean, I think isn't John Waters actually from Baltimore as well?
I guess he
would be a claim to fame. But yeah, I mean, I think it is interesting. I think what you're getting at generally and what this film is, you know, broadly about, but also, you know, it's just like the sense of color and personality that people associate with Baltimore is based on a lot of this, like, you know, like sociological distance to a certain point. Like, you know, the very fact that we're spending so much time with that, you know, the pest person who's just Edmund, who's just a wonderful presence in general. But
real quick,
like those are just it's things that it's I definitely was having the feeling like, man, I really don't see many portraits of Baltimore in general. So to see this, like, I feel like I am seeing something a little bit different. And you know, you compare that to something like Chicago, and you know, you have people like Steve James, like, constantly. I'm doing a huge discredit to Chicago right now. But my point being that, like, Chicago is a place that has a lot more romanticism, even when it comes to inner cities and things and how we talk about that, where Baltimore is very much about this, like, you know, surrealistic divide. So in a way, like, I don't know, as you're talking about this more, this movie seems to make more and more sense, which is weird. But like its messiness seems to be so necessary.
Yeah. And, that's kind of what I was going for, is like, you grew up around Baltimore, you know a lot about Baltimore, and almost all of it is not positive. Except for the fact that our national anthem was written there. So, It's interesting to see it all kind of laid out like this, because you kind of just have this feeling that, like, Baltimore has a rotten soul. But seeing this film and the way that it lays out everything, you know, makes it really interestingly clear how much, you know, city planning and the way that the history of the United States has played out, that's the reason it's happened. But it is strange, because for as interested as this film is in Baltimore, it doesn't really give a lot of context to how it is now. until like the last 10 minutes. So for the longest time, you could be watching this movie and not realize precisely what it's trying to diagnose if you aren't aware of how bad things are.
Sure. Yeah.
Which I think, you know, it makes a little bit of sense because you don't want to start off a movie by saying, "Welcome to Bodymore Murderland, also known as Baltimore. You know, hope you live." But at the same time, without that, you might just think that Baltimore is just another slightly second tier eastern city. Like Philadelphia.
Where's Amanda Waltz?
Oh, she's from Pittsburgh. I was giving her a break, but yeah, Pittsburgh too.
Ugh,
Pittsburgh. Yeah. All those crumbling former industrial centers that cling to whatever sense of cultural relevance they have.
Well, I guess
let me ask you this. Why is there a rat video game in the middle of the movie or the middle of the documentary?
Play the rat?
What is the point of that? Like even the information that I was given during those moments, I was like, why are you giving me this information?
It's hard to parse, you know, like I understand what you're saying. Cause like I kept expecting that to merge with the other video game.
Yes.
But it just didn't.
So no.
At some point, and you just kind of had to get used to that.
And then even the other video game starts to go into like the surrounding world of like how, like the architecture of a video game and how it's kind of like built. And it's like, and then you see the solar system and you're just like, what are you doing right now? What is this documentary about? Because it's definitely like trying to go into the cracks of like the video game world that's been like set up. And it's just like, yeah, you found a hole in a game. There you go.
That's the type of thing where you could say that like it's making a point about how the game is constructed with the overlays and everything, and it approaches
it's
the same
cracked.
Inhuman touch that like Baltimore City Planners did. They have that entire point where they're talking about like how the algorithm will blur out anything that it recognizes a human face, and sometimes it's not even a human.
Yeah, so, like, that was amazing.
Yeah. It's super interesting, but like it's one of those things where it's almost like you're having like a dream or you're flipping through channels and your brain is just kind of making connections.
Yeah, sure.
And so it's this really interesting curated collage that hits and misses, you know, to a degree of, I'd say, about like 85% hits, which again, 4 stars. And I just, it's hard to know though, like why they decided, like, why is that video game important when they could have just had some B-roll of rats? Like why? And then they talk about, there's other things that I kind of expected them to get into that I wasn't sure if it was like, cause the movie opens with like a rat trapped in an empty garbage can. And it says, like, you know, the what are they? The
some
Norway
type of
rats?
Dragster as well.
Norway rat can jump 32 inches, and the Baltimore City garbage bins are 34.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, is that why they're 34 inches?
No,
probably
idea.
Not. But you know, it is an interesting factoid.
Yeah, it's an interesting factoid. And so I was like, I really expected, I guess, just more information.
I did really appreciate
like feeling that I got.
I did really appreciate that experiment they ran in the barn about like population control and how crowded things can get. And although it was interesting because in their reality or in their world that they set up, they basically set up like a what would I call it? A utopian society where basically like none of the rats had to work for food or water.
Yeah.
And all hell broke loose once it reached a certain population point.
Right. And that's what I was talking about. John Calhoun's Universe 25 is, so he had done this 24 times before, and he finally like tweaked everything and was like, I can give these things everything they want and need, and I just need to see what happens when a constructed utopia is given to these. Because they make a point in the film about how rats are like a pretty much perfect indicator for how a human would respond because of similar anatomy and similar social skills, and like their quick lifespan makes them good for aging and everything.
Yep.
And like, it all went to hell because, and it, the more you read about this, the more John Calhoun seems like kind of a maniac, because he talks about how like alpha males like started hoarding women up at the top, and all they did was like eat, and they lost like their interest in like sex or procreation or any other kind of socializing, and he called them the beautiful ones, which is like is the type of thing that a Bond villain would do. And then below the other rats that weren't given this like higher place of stature, you know, they still had everything they needed, but then they just turned into like malcontent, half-crazed cannibals. And it was, like I said, it kind of informs High Rise in that way.
Yeah,
this concept of like what happens when you don't feel that you have a purpose.
Yes, and that's kind of the thing is, you know, as humans, we can be put into a world and a situation where we start to understand that there's more than just, you know, like we're all kind of like bumbling around being idiots and kind of searching for our purpose. So that's nothing new for us. You know, and for the lucky few of us, you know, sometimes food and water and resources like that aren't really of a top concern. And somehow we've managed to fit society around that idea. But you know, I can imagine that if you throw rats into this situation and they're brand new to the situation, they would just flip the fuck out because, you know, they're not wired to deal with a situation like that and think of, you know, the existential situations that they're in and oh, maybe I'll do art now. You know, or maybe I'll write poetry, or maybe I'll read a book, you know, maybe I'll consume art. No, they're just going to be like, well, shit.
Well, there was another rat experiment. Speaking of that, like, it was a similar thing.
Did it give them books?
Like, we're going to give them everything that they want. And then like the rats started doing the same thing. And then someone was like, yeah, but they seem kind of bored. Like, what if we gave them, like, toys and, like, little mouse wheels, and what if they could do stuff? And so, like, they basically had, like, a rat amusement park, and that helped to ameliorate some of these issues.
Haha!
Because, yeah, they did just have, they, you know, you need something to live for, and if you're not motivated by survival anymore, then, you know, you might as well give yourself into some hedonism. It's strange. Now, what did we think about? I don't think we need to do like spoiler section, but I will say I'm about to talk about like the summing up of this movie. What did you think about like the part where at the end, like they kind of had a speculative fiction moment of like July 4th? Like, yeah, they've decided that we're gonna start over and we're gonna bulldoze everything, and there's gonna be. There's going to be like land lotteries and.
Yeah, that's
what was that all about?
That's real nice. That's real nice. That's never going to fucking happen.
But like, you know, is he saying that it should? Like,
I guess he's saying
like we haven't heard from Michael in a bit, dipped out last time. So I want to hear what he has to say.
I'm not dipping out. I'm good.
You owe us half a podcast.
Okay. All right. I to be honest, I couldn't finish last week's podcast. Even when it was out there. What was I going to say? What I will say is that I think if it didn't have that moment, I would be worried that this was reveling too much in that discussion about Blight. And especially towards the end, it kind of comes with that mic drop moment of the layering of the maps. And I think around that time, it does start seeming like it's focusing very much about, like, I mean, I guess you could say the whole movie is about, like, endemic issues and, like, institutional segregation, but there is something far more, like, documentary-like about maybe the last 20 minutes, except for the very, very end. So, like, I think that if it didn't have that moment, there would feel something redundant and a little bit pointless about the whole endeavor. I think that that moment is, as you're saying, like, Bill, it is very much like a pie in the sky. Like, yeah, this is never going to happen. But there is something, as a summation, it's kind of a reminder that we're, like, capable of cycles in terms of things can also get better. And that those people, you know, who seem to be in – you know, the is it the blue areas? Was that the best? I can't remember, unfortunately. Anyways,
I think it went green. Yeah, I think it went like green, blue, yellow, red.
Either
way.
The most affluent citizens can just as quickly become a part of that. And they just as much come from that tradition. So, yes, that moment was definitely strange. And I was almost like during that, I'm like, wait, did I like miss something huge that happened in Baltimore? But it was but I really do think that moment is necessary. And I know we passed it a little bit, but I wanted to mention briefly, I think that VR part is actually really necessary and does kind of double as an interesting commentary, specifically in terms of the fact that it is white people who are using the VR and it is black people who are talking. I think it's Edmund specifically who says something about how you don't even have time for curiosity, you have time for survival. You don't have time, or, you know, you play the cards that you're dealt. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something kind of moving and really interesting about the fact that Theo Anthony, the director, doesn't even really spend time in that VR. Like, there's not really a sequence in there. There's a very brief, like, indication that, yes, this thing exists, but there's nowhere near as much time spent, you know, as the MapQuest, you know, 3D layering thing. So I think that, while, yes, it is strange because it's especially layered with where you can literally see Dan Deacon, the composer, like making these soundscapes while they're with the VR. I think it is very much trying to show again, like this weird combination of voyeurism that comes with like the documentary format, as well as, you know, people wanting to be, you know, like affluent white people, like wanting to do VR and having curiosity about being a rat, while you look at those other people in, you know, the rotted parts of the community. That's not the word I want to use. The point being, the less affluent parts of the community where rats are something where, you know, that woman's kids can't even play outside. Like, I think, again, that's just a part of those comparisons that strangely are both didactic but don't really ever want to follow through. That's what's really strange about the approach of this movie, is like, you know, like the history of Baltimore is like, it's not like it's hidden that that's what this is about at all, but there are very much things that are meant to be, like, as Brian was saying, like flipping through channels or like the digressive feeling of a dream, in the sense that some things seem totally associative. And yeah, I'm projecting my own things on those, but I just feel like there's such intention in the way, specifically in terms of those two video games. When I'm thinking about the editing, I think even that scene where we see that woman in the VR headset comes right after where Edmund is being thanked by that woman. I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's almost a directly right after. Hmm. That Bill, was my take.
As far as the ending is concerned, I think part of it is interesting because they, like Michael was saying, we do kind of go in cycles as a society, but you know, our cycles specifically started and ends when big situations happen. So for, you know, much of Baltimore's history, it was kind of, you know, once we started to realize that electricity, food, water, shelter had to meet certain codes and standards, we kind of revamped our whole situation down there. And kind of, you know, I imagine across the U.S. as well. And that really kind of helped shape and, you know, get rid of a lot of these situations. Some of that stuff in you know, on the outskirts of cities, in the suburbs, in rural areas, don't exactly exist. There aren't quite as many building codes and standards, but definitely inside the city, major metropolitan cities, you know, we have building codes and standards. And so, you know, even if you are living in a poor neighborhood, you still have basic needs that are kind of met by that. Or at least have the potential for those. And so I think, yeah, you know, we do have the ability to kind of wipe it all down and then start again, because clearly those slums that they show in the middle of the documentary are definitely not there in Baltimore anymore, I would imagine. So, you know, that whole neighborhood has probably been wiped out, you know, whether we built nice new places on top of it or what we did with it, I'm not sure, but you know, it's one of those situations where, just like the rats, right? Like we built them a society, and then we see what happens within that. You know, we corralled people, and you know, here's the results, and the results are not very good. You know, when we start to segregate them into low rent areas and things like that. The other thing I wanted to kind of touch on, and I'm not sure if I just didn't notice where this went or if it literally didn't go anywhere, were the remote control cars with the cameras on top of it.
Like, I kind of thought that those were used for the VR thing. Like, I thought that they were driving those around to get, like, the visual information that they would then make into the... I could be wrong.
Okay. But I could see that. Yeah. I could see that. But I was very much interested, like, oh, what are we going to do with this? Are we going to kind of, like... In some ways, the documentary... Do you think they're going to, like, chase one? in some ways, the description of the documentary led me to believe that we were going to follow the rats a little bit more in like their natural habitat, not just in like, you know, caged environments and stuff like that. I thought we were going to learn a little bit more of like their social hierarchy and, you know, situations like that. And so I thought, I don't know what... It would have to be magic school bus kind of shit where they would like shrink those, you know, to like fit inside a wall and then like go exploring. But I was definitely like, oh, are they going to try and like explore like the rats, like, you know, I don't know, holes and things like that. And then I was looking at them. I was like, no, those things are way too big. I don't even know what the fuck they're doing. Right now.
So, yeah. I will say, so I guess kind of to wrap up, one of the things that I liked most about this movie is it, even though it's hard to quite follow what it's doing, they have a very intelligent through line, because one of the many opening vignettes talks about a rat being put into a maze where it can go to some food, but the food is behind like clear glass. And, you know, later on, they like measure the brainwaves when the rat can't get to the food. And then when it's sleeping, they measure its brainwaves again. They have the kind of, staticky kind of pulsing medical noise of like the brain machine, like measuring brainwaves, that kind of popping static. And it says like, you know, the rat is dreaming of like a better future, like one where it gets the damn food. And so every time that there's like a cut between vignettes, they play a single burst
of that.
And I was like, okay, so that kind of lets you know what's going on. So even if you were completely lost as to what precisely is happening,
did I stumble into the wrong documentary? Nope, there's that sound again. Okay, I'm still watching this.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I've spent 5 minutes learning about the Nutshell Murder Studies, which, I mean, are awesome. I mean, it's pretty great.
Were you aware of those, Brian?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what Frances Glessner Lee, I think, is her name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've read about those. Those are super interesting and really cool.
I love that nobody knows the answer.
Yeah, it's super strange. It's one of those stories that's like so weird and so
apocryphal, but it's actually true.
Yeah, it's like, hey, did you hear about this heiress who was like obsessed with like helping detectives become better? And so her idea was to create using legitimate construction techniques, like,
yeah, that's insane.
Dollhouses,
that, like, these things cost like, you know, probably $100,000 or something like that to construct. I mean, we don't know how long ago this was, not off the top of my head, but, you know, just considering that, yeah, someone had to build this, you know, these were not able to be put together at like a factory in China. Right? Like, these had to be legitimately built. And, you know, I think he mentions that they have like working AC and like plumbing and shit like that. So it's just like, what?
And it's so according to Wikipedia, this was throughout the 1940s and 50s that she would host semi-annual seminars on homicide investigation. And so she had
like
these intricately constructed. It's what she wanted to do. I know,
but it's just like it,
she's amazing.
That seems like such a creepy thing. Like, hey, come spend an evening and let's talk about murder. It's like, what? Like, what are we doing? What are we doing again? You know, it's just like, and look, like, you know, some people enjoy that, I'm sure. And that's interesting. But, you know, just out of context, that sounds really weird.
Just a little bit. Yeah. I mean, but like I think that even if you hold no interest in rats, this movie is still like one of the reasons I keep saying 4 stars is because like I would unequivocally recommend this movie to anyone, because even if you're not interested in rats or Baltimore or video games, like, you'll still learn something like about Frances Glessner Lee.
Sure.
It's like there's so many interesting things here that have been kind of stitched together into this quilt. And even though the quilt is a little like ragged on the ends and maybe like is bigger at one end than it is at the other, like,
we need a food metaphor, Brian.
Okay. Even though this fruit salad has a little more honeydew than I would usually like, you know, and maybe you don't like cantaloupe or strawberries, but there is a grape or an apple in there that you could pick out and you could be like, you know what, still a damn good grape or apple. So that's, yeah, so like, it's, I don't, it's not, it's hard to explain, but yeah, I think this is a very good film and I think that people should seek it out and watch it. It's like really all I can say. And at the very least, it'll help to inspire curiosity in you. And shouldn't we all be more curious about our world?
Sure.
All right.
So, and apparently I need to go to Texas.
But Michael now has to go to Texas. And then after driving around Texas, he has to come to the East Coast and drive around. So he can understand the gulf of a difference between the way these places are laid out.
For me, I drive, I'll let this go after this. For me, I drive an hour and a half easily in my, and sometimes in my morning commutes, sometimes in my afternoon commutes. And to me, if I lived an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours away from like another major city or state, I would be all over the fucking place. I would just be like, we're going to this place and we're going to this place and we're going to this place. And people would just be like, why the fuck And I'd be like, I'm from Texas. We don't get to enjoy this. Like, well, we don't get to leave city lines in 30 minutes or less.
Bill,
like,
it's funny you say that, because when my wife and I, when her mother was up here, mm-hmm. it was like, oh, Brian, you know, like, where do you work? Like, and I said, I work in Virginia. And of course, we live in Maryland and we're right on the yes. edge of DC. And so she's like, well, how do you get there? I'm like, well, I just have to drive through DC and then I'm there. And she's like, oh my God, how far is that? I'm like, I don't know, like 45 minutes. She's like, what?
Like, yeah, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Here, it'll blow your mind. The distance time wise between Austin and Houston is the same between DC and New York City. I'm like, I could hit like three other major East Coast cities in the time it would take you to get from Austin to Houston.
That's not fair. See?
Suck it.
Yeah. Yeah, y'all are spoiled.
Like four states and yeah. But you know, sometimes, Bill, you know, you like to be able to just drive out into the middle of nowhere where no one can find you and die like you're in a Cormac McCarthy novel.
Yeah, that takes like 2 hours still though.
Anyway, so this has been a delight. Much like the movie Rat Film, we went on some digressions. If you have any stories about the
geography of your area,
feel free to find us on Twitter at Film Stage Show, The Film Stage Show on Facebook. Email us podcast@filmstage.com. Give us a comment and rating on iTunes. Don't forget to give to our Patreon. For as little as $1 an episode, you get access to our Slack channel and cool raffles. We will be giving away The Big Sick and The Mummy on Blu-ray. So look forward to that. And of course, don't forget to help us out by checking out our sponsor, Mubi, the online streaming cinema. They have curators who go out and find some of the best, most interesting films. So unlike those nights where you're skipping around Netflix or Hulu, which, by the way, now has a horrible interface. It is impossible to find anything on Hulu anymore. All you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage and you will get a free 30-day trial so that you can understand the wonder that is Mubi. Again, that is mubi.com/filmstage. All right, gentlemen. That is it for today. Next week, we're talking about something. It'll either be, I think, Gerald's Game or American Made.
So I'm excited.
Yeah, one of those two. Until then, let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found. Bill Graham.
Woo! You can find me on Twitter at CableBFG. You can find me on the Film Stage's Patreon Slack channel. And yep, that's it.
Okay. Michael Snydell.
You can find me writing the next great 280 character novel on Twitter at Snydell. And I'm not really writing anything lately, but I still watch movies on Letterboxd.
Okay, you can find me at my personal site, dearfilm.net. You can find me also on thefilmstage.com and twitter.com/BrianJRowan. And if you find me on Twitter, apparently I'll be able to write even more nonsense now that they've upped their character limit. Still no edit button. That's cool.
More good abuse reactions, but you know.
I don't understand. Like, that's just like, make it clickable. Let show the people what has changed between tweets. Like, you know, it's not fucking hard. But I'm tired of having to delete a tweet and then immediately send it out, but this time use the correct conjugation of a word. You know, I'm not one of those people who can let that shit stand. I have standards. Anyway, so that's all. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us, and tune in next week.